Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. Today, we're kicking off our summer series of Star Wars Rebels commentary tracks. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is one scruffy nerf herder. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everyone. I have good news. I have recovered movement from below my hips after our insane podcast schedule in the late spring, and I am just chomping at the bit.
Definitely a slightly different pace for our commentary tracks here, a little bit more off the cuff, definitely more informal. It's Star Wars summer, Pete.
It is, and I'm looking forward to it.
So I know that we'll talk, I'm sure, about some of the background of this series as our commentary track begins. This is for the double length pilot episode, so it's I don't know if it's officially numbered 101 and 102, although I think that that's how the cool kids would number it. And I know it kind of it's introducing everything, and I don't know if we want to say much more than that before we get underway, Pete.
Let's roll it out.
All right, so we have the first frame or two of the episode ready to go. It's on pause. If you're watching with us, you could get your show there. We're rolling no commercials on this, so if you are watching, say, on demand, on the app, that kind of thing, and they're going to pause for commercials, just pause us, and we're just going straight through. I think I should mention, Pete, I don't know if every version of the of this first episode now includes that special edition scene. I hate to use the phrase special edition. Don't want to be controversial in the Star Wars podcast, but kind of starts with the Darth Vader thing. And so that's where we're starting here.
Yes.
And if you all at home,
version 2.0 already, if you will.
There you go. If for some reason your version doesn't start with that, then give us about 30 seconds and then we'll be on the planet Lothal. So, Pete, do you have your finger on the button?
I do.
All right, listeners, we hope you do. We're going to go 3, 2, 1, and we are underway. So, Pete, this was, I think, a little bit of a controversial series, given how beloved Clone Wars was, and it kind of, Star Wars Clone Wars had this necessary death of, you know, the Disney purchase and whatnot. But here we are, starting with the first character introduced, Darth Vader. Is this a Star Wars character that we should know about, Pete?
It is, and for them to roll out this pilot and then go back and show this on ABC with this scene, they wanted to hit a larger audience, and they already had a second season guaranteed, and this threw them over the top in terms of the awareness at the time.
It's interesting to watch this show on Disney XD. My Star Wars Clone Wars experience was exclusively on Netflix. So to kind of be traipsing over to the kid channel was interesting. It was also interesting to note the advertising difference between the first episode of the season and the last episode. By the end of the season, there were commercials for adult products.
Right. I had a lot of experience with Disney XD for the Tron Uprising show, which I would kind of consider like Rebels 0.5 in the way that they attacked it there. Now into the body of the episode with the first tease that was tacked on and the original tease that they had. Matt, I just want to point out, I'm watching this for the first time. It's on the Disney XD app. We're watching it before it's even aired. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Star Wars Aladdin with the street Lothrat. And I'm coming off of Clone Wars, which was maligned early on with the Clone Wars movie. And Ahsoka and Snips and Sky Guy and some of the stuff that was seen as very childish. And I got really worried when I saw the theft of alien fruit going on. But you had to have heart and hope to move past it, much like Clone Wars did in this first season. They found their gear.
And I think it's important to keep in mind, even if you're, or especially rather, if you're coming off of watching Clone Wars, this is with a drastically different budget that this show is operating on. Not that that ultimately, I think, is good or bad. I mean, more money is always a good thing. The comment that I've since read about Clone Wars was George Lucas was throwing, quote, Pixar money at the episode. So you figure, what, three episodes of Clone Wars, potentially, we're talking certainly multiple tens of millions of dollars to even be in the neighborhood of Pixar. You can't do that for something. Now that's kind of all Disney and in-house, not the George's passion. You can't do that. Still, though, there are cinematic elements. This one kind of shot here, I mean, simple enough to have Kanan at the center as we also have the introduction of that kind of force. I don't know what the force sound, the force whistle, which is a motif certainly throughout the early or the throughout the first season.
And, you know, piggybacking on what you say there, Matt, with scaling back here, 90% of this first season occurs on or around Lothal. They really upped what they had in the reused sets using a lot of artwork, whereas Clone Wars had a lot of 1940s motifs of art on the gunships and on the vehicles. Here we have a lot of graffiti and the things done by our characters in terms of personalizing their gear. Really, it's fun stuff and it's visually attracting.
It is, and I think that we adults oftentimes forget that Star Wars is meant to be for, I'll say children. I don't mean the youngest of the youngest necessarily, but it's meant to appeal to the child in all of us. So the fact that this isn't all like, Dad, why are you cutting off my hand kind of stuff, that's just not always where Star Wars is supposed to be. And I like here as we're, you know, as we're being introduced to these various characters here in this theft from thieves, stealing from the evil empire, is occurring, which is certainly a neat kind of layering of apparently everybody's kind of bad at this point. We've talked so many times in so many different series about the burden of exposition in an initial episode where it's like, how do you introduce these people in a new way? And this is one of the better ways that we've seen, you know, kid on his own now coming across mysterious people, clearly going to get scooped up by them and introduced to them. I have to say, since first seeing this episode, I feel like I'm somewhat kinder towards the limitations in the animation here. It's not that big scope that we saw in Clone Wars, but that's okay.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the trope of stealing from the bad guys, and other group was trying to steal from them, and Ezra is taking the crates. This was my lowest point of Star Wars Aladdin that I was the most concerned. That and beat for beat recycling Return of the Jedi speeder bike sounds. It gets much, much better.
It definitely is interesting how this episode and some of the earlier ones do very consciously hit on those beats of prior Star Wars properties, particularly the movies. I don't know that it's the choice I would have made. I somehow suspect it's not maybe the first choice of the people who are making it, but it is what it is. It certainly is reminding us this is a familiar universe.
And as we introduce the characters, we've seen Kanan now, we've seen Zeb, we've seen Sabine. We're coming up on the introduction of Hera, all within the conflict of this other group. And of course, we already know the Empire. We just don't know the names of these non-stormtrooper helmeted Imperials.
There's a fun in rewatching this episode, having seen the whole season, certainly the idea that as a production they had to recycle sets. I mean, I'm just thinking the number of episodes we have scenes on this speedway,
causeway,
You know, it's a lot, and I get that. That's just as in a physical production, you know, you need to build these sets digitally, and that is expensive. So the fact that we're on, you know, kind of the fields of grain version of Tatooine here, where you can just go, all right, computer, do more grain for 50 miles in every direction. Let's put a couple of hills in there, you know. So be it.
Okay, we get the introduction of the ghost here. Or as I was thinking at this point in my original watch, new Millennium Falcon.
The design of the ghost has very much grown on me throughout the course of the series. I really dig it as this kind of snub-nosed, you know, it's a ship that's beautiful because it's ugly, where the Millennium Falcon is beautiful because it's beautiful.
And that it's got bits and pieces. It's an idea they've recycled from, you know, the amount of art and concepts they've recycled from the Clone Wars and the original Star Wars trilogy is myriad throughout this first season. The Phantom, which comes off of the ghost, the little ship there, that's a direct nod to the Millennium Falcon having an escape pod that would be its own little vehicle.
I did not know that, but I know that the character design for Zeb is an early Chewbacca, right?
Yes, yes. And we will see early Han Solo when they arrive at the refugee camp, Tarkintown, in this double-length episode.
And I believe I'm correct in saying that once you see him, you will then not stop seeing him as they reuse that digital actor, that digital character in old man version, normal version. So, I mean, again, I think you come off the riches of Clone Wars and you say, what do you mean you didn't have somebody lovingly create 50 background people all unique and wonderful? They're just not. There's a new boss in town, and it's Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, and he'll be in season two.
What, is that a spoiler, Pete?
This is spoiler, Pete.
I think even, I mean, some of the animation beats, like when he kind of said, I can't breathe, I think that there's a levity there or a cartooniness there that, A, is not required in later episodes of this season, but also I think they just kind of, you know, they as a production, and I don't know how many animators came over from Clone Wars and so on and so forth, but you need to find what this show is on every level, whether it's character design, voice acting, all of that. And this is a pilot, even though it's from people who have done 100 plus episodes of Clone Wars.
You can't watch this first sequence and not feel that this is highly evocative of the better parts of the original trilogy. Here we've got our ragtag group together. We've got the piloting action going on in the cockpit. We've got shenanigans down below. We've got the classic John Williams fanfares being played as the TIE fighters are in pursuit. And guess what, people? We're 18 months out from, you know, an experience that's going to absorb the globe in Star Wars The Force Awakens. And this was all, little did you know, this was all paving the path for it.
Indeed. Now, Pete, as memory recalls, we're about to do a very, I was going to say liberal, but a very, very close quote to the similar battle in A New Hope, which also made me a little nervous. Like, we're just quoting beats here. But I guess it's just an opportunity for us to just not get cocky, kid. Oh, they're introducing themselves, Pete, because it's exposition, but it's nicely put into the course of the narrative.
Just a little incongruity previously Sabine wished Ezra good luck, and now they meet face to face and she's giving him the cold shoulder. But all right, kids can't remember 7 minutes before.
That's right. They're rather like golden retrievers, I've heard. They're surprised that there's a backyard every morning, and they're happy to relieve themselves out there. Also, the golden retrievers don't remember that there's a backyard.
Here we have Agent Callis for the first time, and Disney, with its hatred of facial hair, and pushing the envelope here, but he's a bad guy. And, you know, let's not forget that Ezra has the below the chin facial hair. Kanan. And I'm sorry, you're right, Kanan.
I just out Star Wars Kanan Pete.
And Callis has the loath chops, as I call them, not the mutton chops.
So can we assume then that, with the exception of Lando Calrissian, that we cannot trust Star Wars characters with hair on their upper lip? And even, I would argue, if you've been tortured by Darth Vader, then you might think that you really can't always trust Lando Calrissian.
You can't.
You know, Pete, question for you. Was the reference there to Capital City a reference to the monorail episode of The Simpsons, or is that perhaps a bit of a stretch?
I don't know that show, so I'm going to not answer it.
Well, that was a particular episode that starred the late, great Leonard Nimoy. So this might be the great reckoning between the two stars franchises.
So here we are in Tarkintown, as previously referenced, and they're going to show us some other background characters here, down on their luck. There's broke-ass Han Solo and broke-ass Greedo. There's a woman with her back turned to the camera who doesn't have a broke ass.
That, by the way, there's the potential for it to be an action figure called Lady Standy, and they're going to make 8,000 of them in commemorative packaging. It's nice that this voice actor, whose name I apologize I don't know, who I know played another kind of, who was the piratey type guy in Clone Wars?
You would be referring to Hondo Onaka?
Indeed. I'm glad that they have that voice actor back in this to play Hornhead McGee.
Yes. Well, he is a Deveronian, and that would be the character. Why can't I remember his name right now?
Oh, man. The perils of doing a live commentary track. The inclusion of Tarkintown in the story, it's a nice shorthand way, especially if you're kind of understanding the notion of kind of, you know,
Hooverville.
Visago. There we go. Kind of the Hooverville kind of reference, at least to, you know, the American portion of the Great Depression and all that, but just really shorthand. Even if you don't know who Tarkin is, that kind of shorthand of these are the people who are being out put out by this guy who's in charge. Again, really smart exposition. We know who Tarkin is, but if you don't, if you're 8 years old and not quite understanding that that's the guy who you know, wears slippers in the old Star Wars movie, nice kind of exposition there.
And a nice nod to what is to come, not only sequentially with Episode 4, the original Star Wars, A New Hope, and later on in this series.
Let's talk a little bit about Chopper. Chopper has fast become a character that I like, dare say, more than R2-D2. I like that he's kind of snotty and sarcastic, and there's a little bit more personality there. And I like the old school design that they have for him.
Well, first off, bite your tongue, because what you said is blasphemous. You're not allowed to like another droid more than R2-D2. he can be second.
I'm polydroidal, Pete.
Until you meet BB 8. But yeah, Chopper's good. He's just not R2, man.
Wah, wah. Now, Pete, I should recommend to our listeners a book that I have read that you have not, which is one of the new books in the official Star Wars canon of books, since all the other books have now been relegated to legend status. But A New Dawn, I believe it's called, which is a prequel story of Kanan primarily, and then him meeting Hera. It is absolutely fabulous. I understand why it's not appropriate, say, for a Rebels storyline, just because there's a lot less kid action, but ton of fun. You definitely see Kanan as the super, I won't say undercover, but as the, well, not to mix my metaphors here, but as the super closeted Jedi. Like, there's not even, no one shares that secret. He's living totally alone, and just a wonderful read. And darned if he doesn't meet himself a girl who's got herself a ship.
I have read a lot of the now relegated to legend status books, so I guess I'm a little gun shy when it comes to that. They've also begun a comic series for Kanan, the last Padawan. I'm going to dip my toe into it when this fall we get a lot of the stuff that is directly linked up to The Force Awakens. I'm just fearful at some point somebody's going to go back and retcon a lot of these myths again.
Well, I understand Disney's point of view of wanting to start fresh. I know some people have found it a bit strange that they did Rebels at the space where they have, which is, well, we're not going to go back to the prequels because everybody hates them, despite the fact they did $3 billion in box office.
Right, right.
You know, there's kind of this, frankly, there's this pinky up mentality by a lot of Star Wars fans who are older than a certain age, not realizing that if you're younger than a certain age, you're just fine with them, that you're not getting caught up in, like, I want my pre-digital effects. This is unfair. But I digress. Some people found it strange that they're doing this show five years before A New Hope, when we're headed to 30 years after Return of the Jedi. Your thoughts, Pete?
I take great issue with the prequel haters. Say what you want about them, and there were things they didn't get right. But it's like you say, Matt, there is a generation of kids and teens who, that's their Star Wars. And we're all going to lose our minds in December.
Indeed, indeed. I like that they've kind of gone with the dichotomy here of Hera as boss of the ship, but Kanan clearly as, you know, kind of the, I don't know, Kanan as the traditional guy in charge. And I like that there's kind of that notion that he might be in charge of the missions, but she's chief of the boat kind of thing.
This is a nice gag here, referencing Zeb's appearance as proto Wookiee, being the rare hairless Wookiee, and then bashing them out.
If you aren't coming to this episode with a ton of, I'll say, baggage, which is, this looks a lot like A New Hope, this is not Clone Wars, where's Ahsoka? If you're not coming with any of that stuff, it really is a very effective pilot episode for a family cartoon, a family story. I wouldn't even say cartoon, because that shouldn't be pejorative, but I think it is a family show. You kind of, again, you kind of get caught up with your own personal Star Wars history of, like, oh, there's not enough Darth Vader, there's not enough Clone Wars, there's not enough, this isn't the way they animated the other animated show, so on and so forth. I will say one thing, though. I do hate Ezra's electro slingshot thing. He can only keep that if in season two he also is using white nano paint to paint Aunt Polly's fence. Other than that, come on, no.
Well, he's you know, once he's got the lightsaber, he has the handle that shoots. So that's like, you know, the next evolution of that. But back on the prequel thing, Matt, I think what angered, you know, a lot of people of our generation is there was no charming rogue. There was no damsel in distress. And for Rebels to come out and be very smart about picking and choosing the archetypes they went back to, again, with an eye that you're going to get many of these come December, it's smart to reintroduce them in the time frame that they're working in.
And I think as well, they're operating in this, and you know, I'll use a controversial phrase here that has since been basically retired in Star Warsness, but a show like this is trying to add to the expanded universe nature, and I don't certainly mean in that hierarchical thing that went on at Lucasfilm, which was always weird. I've always been a Star Wars fan, just not super tied into, like, don't you understand that on the land of Oogalog, that's where the blast crystals come from, and how can they? I have that in the encyclopedia. Like, I was never towards that degree. I was just that way with Star Trek stuff.
Right. Everybody knows that Oogalag is in the Bespin system, and it is a non-inhabitable planet.
Indeed. But I mean, my point being, you can have some of this. You don't need the archetypes. You don't need Luke and Leia, the cartoon series or whatever, to be fleshing out different corners. And the fact that in the process of this series, as we're setting up this tiny bunch of you know, what are they exactly? Here we are, you know, halfway through the episode. They're kind of thieves. I don't get how this is how they are like rebellion rebels. To spend an entire season where you are building a show, building sets, and they're doing all that stuff, and in the background slowly letting you into the rebellion. In retrospect, it's a great, great way to do it.
It's smart, the point in time that they picked. We never understood much of the rebellion. You consider the scenes we get in the original trilogy. We have seen at the end of episode 4, A New Hope, where we have a rebel base that we never go back to, and we barely get names of a couple characters there. We have Hoth, which is vacated by the rebels. And then we have a meeting before the Death Star mission with Admiral Akbar. That's really about it. So to flesh them out as an organization, here the idea of a cell. We know by the end of the season they will become aware of other cells, how that's going to go, and the potential to bring in old characters and new characters is great.
It is, and it's part of that, you know, again, I'll use another phrase used elsewhere. It's kind of that cinematic universe approach where I'm okay with the fact that Disney wiped away everything but the 6 movies, Clone Wars, and then in anticipation of Rebels, said Rebels will be canonical, just because so much of the Star Wars experience that has been thus far was this mishmash of, well, if George dreams up something bigger, he of course has that right because it's his name on the door, B, he signs my paychecks, and C, it's his right as the uber creator of it all, which is all well and good for a point, but if you're now going to be adding canonical authenticity to multiple series and spin-off movies and this and that the other, you need, I don't know, you need to start fresh. You need to start with the core and work out from there.
I got to call shenanigans on this scene between Ezra and Kallus. Ezra just said his name was Jabba the Hutt. If you are an agent of the Imperial Bureau of Investigations, you better know who Jabba the Hutt is. I realize there were quotes around Jabba when he said it back to him, but how about, like, yeah, I know you're not a 800-year-old gangster who lives on Tatooine.
I think, listen, I think that it's, I think it was received in the same way as I was going to say you or I, but of course we live the straight and narrow path. But if one were to be arrested and you give your name as Sonny Corleone, I think that would a cop say, wait a minute, that's not your name, or would they just immediately blow it off?
I get that, but yeah, you gotta show the fans a little bit of respect there. Here we get the holocron, which later is alluded in this episode. This was a test. Holocrons never having been glimpsed on screen before, and we have the Obi-Wan Kenobi warning during Order 66.
This message and its reception, the holocron, is also referenced in the New Dawn novel. So it's nice seeing these I don't know, the new stitchings of the new Star Wars cinematic universe kind of coming together. Again, I mean, I guess cinematic in quotes if you're using the books, but the new Star Wars universe as it stands. It's nice to see how they're really making that effort to have things cross-pollinate.
Now we have the internal discussion. Do we go back and get Space Aladdin that he's been captured?
You know what, Pete? They're going to turn around. They're going to go for a magic carpet ride. And yeah.
Well, as these characters take a step into a whole new world, they're going to realize they've never had a friend like me.
Wow. Wow. That was the twofer right there.
Here we're going to go with some more of the Macquarie-inspired, art with the helmets, very reminiscent of original Snowtrooper design here.
I guess here we will also see, luckily he's on the right radio channel to hear the things he needs to hear.
Yes.
So let's just keep a note there. Imperial officer guy there in the center, not Callus, but the other guy. Let's just put a little mental note in that character design there, blonde hair, hat over his face, because he will play, quote unquote, Imperial officer guy multiple times again. Again, I understand the need to repeat, not exactly characters. I mean, I'll say actors, and I'm sure everyone understands that they know what I mean, but to repeat those, to repeat those actors to populate the scenes, I get that. It's just, you wish George was throwing Pixar level money at this show. Not that it's like, because at the end of the day, the characters shine through, which is what's most important.
There were two Imperial officers who did get names, who meet with a rather grisly fate a little later in the season.
This is true. This is true. They lose their heads. I wonder how less, no pun intended, callous viewers, which is to say probably ones that are younger,
might... Oh, see that? Zeb stopped Space Aladdin from firing your favorite weapon there.
the space slingshot. Anyhow, I mean, I just wonder how a younger person would take towards, like, oh, look, they're just repeating the kind of Death Star aesthetic for, you know, the set here, or is it just like, hey, it looks like the movies?
I think it's a movie look-alike thing, and considering that we're 5 years in time before Star Wars, you've got to make it look like that. Really like the character, a flourish for Sabine as a graffiti artist. Although I'm not quite sure why Callus saw spray paint, saw the Phoenix Rebels insignia, and then had to wipe his hand over it and smell the spray paint. That was really kind of weird.
was it possibly that it wasn't exactly spray paint, that it was some of the explosive material? I don't know. I agree. There was a little bit of a 2 + 2 = 5 conclusion there. Boy, I can't wait to get more Wookiee storylines, like the Clone Wars storyline of the battle on Kashyyyk. Oh, wait, they never did that.
Oh, why must you remind me of that? That was easily the storyline that I wanted to see the most, and they had plotted it out and everything, and we're just never going to get it. It's depressing. Let's focus on this show, Matt.
Pete, anything you want to say about the fact that British actor voicing Agent Callus is a black man, and here it's a white character? I found that just a little, I don't know. Like, this is a very, I don't know. Just throwing that out there. Any thoughts there?
No, but let's talk about Kessel here, a location that was referenced in the original that we're seeing for the first time, and to get a whole bunch of Wookiees on this planet. This is highly evocative of the promise of the original movies.
And indeed a reminder that as George Lucas explains on some of the commentary tracks, the Kessel run can be a particular number of parsecs because ships don't go fast in hyperspace. They merely calculate better than others.
You mean they go to hyperdrive, like I saw somebody say the other day?
Yes, the fantastic-looking display at Madame Tussauds London of the different Star Wars stuff. The one guy does reference how you can go on what's the proper noun? The control room? The bridge? What am I looking for? Of the Millennium Falcon,
the cockpit,
the cockpit. There, my brain just wasn't giving it to me. I guess I was being too cocky, or not cocky enough, I suppose. But you can go in the cockpit, and he said, and then you can go into hyperdrive.
Yeah.
No. I like that little wheel that Chopper has in the front. I know R2 has one, but the fact that it's just like a wheel that he can lean forward on and kick off of, it's
little more unicycle-ish.
Yes, and it's appropriate, A, for computer animation in any venue, whether it's a computer cartoon or computer-generated, you know, effects for live action. But it's fun, particularly for a computer-animated show.
This is the best sequence of this episode. We have the Imperials arriving en masse. We have Baby Wookiee handcuffed running away as a foil for Ezra, and we're about to let the cat out of the bag, Matt.
Pete, as you know, I live in a spoiler-free existence. I had seen quite a bit about this show. The fact that the Kanan reveal, I mean, it's already been certainly hinted at, but the fact that there's this big reveal moment, and I had already seen it, I did regret slightly. By the way, just want to spend a split second to talk about how interesting animation decision that a lot of the close-ups show kind of a speckled texture to things. I'm not saying whether it's necessarily good or bad. To me, it's certainly stylistically different than Clone Wars and different than a lot of other things that you'll see in the animation neighborhood.
A little more lived in, and now we've established Kanan wielding a lightsaber, and we get the line from Callus here: concentrate firepower on the Jedi.
It's probably too much to hope for that the sequel trilogy will include some of these characters, but I would love that, even if it's in the most minor of ways. I mean, if you're gonna sit and go, background guy who has a mustache and wears a gold jacket, let's give him a name and make an action figure out of him. Let's make it a thing. You know, if you're going to do that, then darn it, use some of these characters.
Well, Matt, let's not forget that the anthology films, the spin-off films now, the first of which, Star Wars Rogue One, will deal with the theft of the Death Star plans. I think you might see, if not at least reference, some of our band here from Rebels.
Yeah, I'm just doing the mental math there. So presumably the theft of the Death Star plans would be within a year of A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And this is 5 years before. So that could be fun.
That could definitely be fun.
And there's... Oh! It was a Wilhelm scream, Pete! It's an official production! And we've come full circle because it was Ben Burtt that dusted that off.
Well, we're not going to get the Wilhelm scream in a moment when Kallus gets ticked at the Stormtrooper, but maybe the bloodiest thing he ever does as a character.
And certainly, I think, a little bit of a calling card to the adult people in the audience to say, yeah, we can do big boy stuff too. This isn't all going to be like, gee willikers, I'm going to shoot a laser shock from my slingshot, buddy. There's a lack of precision in Kanan's Jedi-ing here, yes, which I think is so incredibly appropriate.
There he goes. That's one of his own stormtroopers to its likely death.
He killed a man, so it's funny. Life is cheap. I understand why the Wookiee hair is so solid, because it would take forever to animate. I just wish it wasn't. And that's not even a TV thing. Like, Monsters, Inc., Sully has something like 2.5 million hairs, and it would take, 3 days to do a minute of footage or whatever. But I get that. It's just, I wish they were big, hairy Wookiees.
And the Wookiee work that they do in this episode really helps to erase the bad taste you get from the Christmas special.
Ah, the famous Christmas special.
If by famous you mean awful.
Pete, will Wookiees in season 2 of Rebels do the Tarzan yell as we saw in episode 3?
Probably not.
That's a relief too.
So we get some notes here that, and we know this is not going to happen, that the newly formed family may need to separate. Ezra as the loner. We send our Wookiees off here, but not before Space Aladdin makes one final theft.
It is interesting that they make Ezra slightly unlikable. Because, I mean, look, obviously, as you said, they're all going to end up together as one big space family. And I think that even the adults in the audience are meant to kind of, identify with Ezra as, the young person in all of us, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But it's interesting that he is kind of a little standoffish, and, we certainly identify with the Jedi. So the fact that he just stole a lightsaber from a, hidden Jedi.
There's a lot of ways that this scene could have played out. They have him go back to his space needle, space not in needle Seattle. He's got stormtrooper helmets. He's got swag. And to have the discussion unfold the way it does here, he knows that Kanan is behind him. We hint at future development of his strength in the Force. And this is the call. This is, you can come with us or you can have your souvenirs here.
And better echoes here than some of the earlier scenes where it's the, come with me to Alderaan. And, no, I can't leave, fast forward to, I have nothing here. Like, it's a little bit, it's evocative without being bit of a ripoff.
Do you worry, Matt, that, here a couple years before, one space orphan meets another Jedi mentor, that we have other space orphan meeting another Jedi mentor who now is watching a hologram of the other Jedi mentor.
Of his own mentor. It is an area of a bit of concern. I think the question moving forward, if this is a show that's going to continue to be made, let's say past the second season, and continue to resonate for years to come.
Oh, he said the line of the next movie.
He said the thing. does it come off as some of these patterns that, like kind of a literary pattern?
Right.
Or not, to me, it's kind of your entrance into, like, Pete, I'll throw some tailspin at you. You know, the cartoon from the late 80s, that had an orphan boy and an older man friend who's going to, like, train him in stuff. And that had, like, a lady who owned the plane, too. So that doesn't mean it's,
Here's the one thing we lose by the Vader sequence at the beginning. To get the introduction of the Inquisitor at the end of this episode automatically carries less weight.
Yes. However, I think it does also put a little bit of the foot on the gas pedal in terms of, hey, this is a guy that's out there. Like, you kind of get more of that bookend sense of there's pressure on these people, even though it wasn't the Inquisitor fighting Jedi this time. But Pete, let's talk about all the time. How can people be in touch with you on the Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J. Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 5,801 followers. Can't be wrong.
Wow. That one makes all the difference. And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast in four ways. I'll tell you about three of them. We are Fantastic Geek. That's fantastic with a PH. And you can get in touch on the .com, the Gmail, and the Twitter. But wait, there's more.
You should follow the Force to facebook.com/Fantastic Geek with a PH, all one word. Just another way to get in touch with us and interact.
Well, that, Pete, we will be back before too long with the next commentary track episode of Star Wars Rebels, that the third episode in production, also looked at as the second episode if you view the first 2.5 hours as the one big half hour. But we'll be back before long to get back to space.
We will.
Well, that... I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the traditional final word.
Carabast.